Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, we just called the meeting to order and started recording.
So there are a couple of rates we wanted to update, and then some new ones we're going to put in place. So in the memo, we can probably just go through this memo really quick. So the district is requesting the introduction of a new drawing review fee. So when a developer would bring in plans, we wouldn't really capture the cost of reviewing those plans and making sure they were in order. So we've implemented a fee that's $500 for those. The other development-related project fee that we're increasing is we've always charged just 3% inspection fee for our staff to go out and make sure lines are getting put in correctly. We've been tracking over about the last year and a half, 2 years, all the hours we actually spend on that. And I calculated out that we were undercharging to just cover our expenses. So we're increasing that to 5%. We may look at that again next year, maybe move it up to 6. 6 is kind of a standard up here we've seen. But our numbers, we justified at least 5 in a little bit, so we just went 5 for right now. The fire hydrant fees, we had, unfortunately, we kind of had in two sections. We have an interruptible wholesale rate, which is the same as our fire hydrant fees. So in the January 1st, we hadn't officially updated those, so we're just bringing those in line with the other interruptible sources. And then down a little bit, so the state has mandated that usage fee that they will collect to help with capital projects across the state. We are going to adopt it right now. As you see in the memo, they gave us an estimate on what our first bill would be, and it's only $10,700 based on our usage. So we're trying to decide how to best implement that. What we'll probably do is probably just increase each of our tiered rates next year with our rates by a penny or two, and it'll cover it. But for right now, we want to at least get it on our rate sheet, and then we'll finalize as we finalize the best way to capture that money. We will do it. Then on our impact fees, so these are personal residences. We were charging just $100 to review that. But again, we looked at the staff and the hours they had to spend, and we were not recapturing enough to cover our expenses. So we've increased that to $150. Somebody on Chris's staff has to look at it. Anna looks at it. I review it and sign off. So it adds up pretty quick.
Does that get captured in the impact fee calculation?
Or it does.
It's a separate fee?
It's a separate fee because the impact fee calculation is very specific based on the facilities plan.
Okay.
The other one is, as you know, as board members, often you've made a recommendation to have a parcel annexed into the district with the county. What we realized is we were doing a lot of that work, especially Chris, getting the maps and all the right legal description of that. So we are going to charge a $200 fee to capture our expenses on that. Again, all this stuff is just so we're not pushing costs onto ratepayers for things that are actually developer driven.
And the other thing too, Corey, on that impact review fee, oftentimes people will come fishing and they ask us and ask us and ask us, and this at least, whether they actually follow through or not,
right?
This allows us to capture.
I just wasn't sure if it was, in my world, a lot of those fees are kind of rolled into the impact fee, and it's like a prepayment sort of a thing, like a reserve, I guess. I don't know how you can say that.
But no, this is just if you want us to provide you the data and spend the time.
Right.
An application fee, basically.
We know if you're serious.
Great. And then the last one was the fire flow analysis fee. We've provided this service before, Sam and his team, but we never called it out specifically as a separate fee. We'd use like the on-site fee or inspection fee. So we just wanted that to be more clear. That this is what you're paying for, this is the charge for it. So those are, then the big change or the another addition is for this. Yes.
What exactly goes into the fire flow fee?
Sam, would you mind?
So when we get a request for design parameters for a fire suppression system, people will request to come up to the system, get on a fire hydrant, you know, rip it open, and do a fire flow test, a physical one. Which
Great,
is a
thank you.
It's a bad idea for us for a lot of reasons. So we generate one using our hydraulic model, and we provide it to the fire suppression departments.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And the last group of fees at the bottom of the rate sheet, if you have that pulled up, is for this room. We've had a lot of interest from third parties to be able to rent this, rent the kitchen, and things like that. And so we followed the county's model for their facilities, similar that are rented out. Lisa did a lot of work on pulling those rates. And so we have that now. If we do, if you're another Summit County entity and things like that, we don't really charge for those. But this is for more like for-profit or outside organizations, or if a resident of the district or the county wants to use the facility. So we put those in place. So it's still nice and people can use it, but they won't wear it out without having to help us cover some costs. So
just so I understood that, because I talked to Andy just a little bit about this the other day, and you just implied that if it's a Summit County entity, then perhaps the rate schedule doesn't really apply.
That was my understanding.
But as it's written, does apply. And I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure I understand.
I think it's Summit County resident, nonprofit organization, military, veteran.
Would be $600 a day.
Yes.
Because a county would be a governmental entity, or it seemed differently?
I guess that means outside of Summit County. Summit County is both Summit County Special Service Districts. So if another governmental agency, say the sewer district.
Sure.
Yes, that it would. In my mind, that's how we were doing it. But anything, any one of our sister agencies within Summit County that's the governing body, we would not charge a fee.
Okay,
but UDOT, let's say.
Yeah, so if Place and Rec wanted to come over here, as I'm reading it, I would have imagined that they fell into the governmental entity category, but you're telling me maybe not.
They're a Summit County, governed by Summit County.
Okay. Yeah, all the places that we've been able to use their space, we would reciprocate, and we have been.
Sure, and that's all good and well. I'm just trying to wrap
up. I think we have discretion in there that if we wanted to waive the fee. I mean, in some ways, I mean, we had one group that wanted to use it on a regularly scheduled basis. And because we didn't have this fee in place, you know, we allowed them to use it. And then when we told them that the fee was coming, they decided to go elsewhere. Because it can be making sure we don't stay if they're here, because we can lock off that side of the building, but we still have to worry and look on a camera to see if they're still here or not here, if they get locked out. So.
Okay. If you scroll up to the state mandated fee, a little higher. There we go. The usage fee, the state mandated one. There was a value there, so I understood that was a new fee.
Correct.
So the state proposed the 3 cents.
Okay.
And then they came back and dropped it to half.
Another question. So it's half.
That's their revision.
So it's never been implemented, but okay.
Yeah.
That was a clear sense.
Yeah.
And as we've already adopted the monthly charge $1, that will kick in not the end of June bills or your July 1st bill, but it'll be effective July 1st. So your July 31st, August 1st bill will have that $1 charge for anybody who still wants a paper bill. So that'll be interesting to see when that rolls out, how that's handled.
And as of the other day, we had 3,500.
It's about half and half.
People that still want a paper bill.
That may change now if they have to pay $1. All right, so I think we need a recommendation.
We have to hold the public hearing.
Hold the public hearing. So, step over to Lisa to official. How do we do this?
Yeah, Karen needs to make a motion. Go to the next agenda item. Okay, so we are moving on to the consideration and possible approval of changes to the 2026 water rates and fee schedule effective July 1st, 2026.
Actually, first, I think we need to hold a public
hearing.
You have to open the public hearing.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, so number three. So you would open.
I'm going to open a public hearing. Or does that have to?
Yeah, and you have to approve it.
You're right. You're opening the public hearing.
You don't have to have a motion to open the public hearing. The chair
just open it.
Open a public hearing on the water rate fee schedule as presented.
Okay, so I'm opening the public hearing on the water rate fee schedule.
Nobody's online.
And okay, nobody else is online.
I would.
Oh, then you just close it.
Then we close. We don't have to make motions in
and
the public hearing.
And then you make a motion.
Understood.
Yeah, you can't make a motion in the public hearing.
Right.
If there's no public comment or no public participation, then the chair can close the public hearing.
Okay, so there is no public comment. So I'm going to close the public hearing.
All right. I will move to approve the changes to the 2026 water rates and fee schedule effective July 1st, 2026.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous. And now we're on to the part we've all been waiting for, the 2025 audit presentation.
All right. Well, we have our illustrious auditors here with us. Kyle and Trey. Sorry, Trey, I didn't get your name on the agenda. I didn't know you were coming until just a couple days ago, but very happy to have you here with us. They both came up and did the field work with us and then back and forth a lot. So I'll go ahead and turn the time over to you guys if you'd like to just sure. talk about the experience and what you thought and whatever you need to do.
Okay.
And Karen will probably have lots of questions for you. Just kidding.
Oh, I already asked all my questions. Okay.
Well, feel free to ask if you have more. Thank you for having us up here. This is awesome. We toured the building when we came. When did we come? March?
Yeah, March.
When we toured a beautiful place and back here again. So thank you for having us and go through it. So this year, we performed the audit, which, again, means a lot of test work, right? Confirming balances, looking at invoices, looking at agreements, those type of things, just making sure there's support for what you say is your assets and make sure the liabilities are reported and those things, right? So we performed that and ultimately have issued an unmodified opinion. So this is our auditor's report just right after the table of contents. That second paragraph kind of states our opinion. So in our opinion, the financial statements present in all material respects. And so that present fairly in all material respects. So in the accounting world, that's called an unmodified opinion. We're a little bit weird, but that's what it's called. And so a clean opinion, though, ultimately. Meaning, so the support we got was sufficient. We look at just the basis for opinion paragraph. I'll maybe just read this last sentence. So it says, we believe that the audit evidence we have obtained is sufficient and appropriate to provide a basis for our audit opinion. So that's really what it boils down to. We've gotten enough evidence and support to say that these are good numbers, right? So then the rest of this, the auditor's report does describe a little bit. Your responsibility is management. Our responsibility is the auditor. Type of things there. So. A clean opinion. You'll have to remind me, Steve, I'm sorry, I should have asked before, how much detail of the actual numbers would you, Lisa, and Andy like in the board?
I would defer to the board. Any...
You know, I would go through and maybe just...
That's okay.
You can increases in revenue, assets, right. Kind of what you saw.
Yep.
Just your two-year comparison.
Yep. Perfect. So that's what I was going to go through. I just want to make sure we're good at that level. So this is your balance sheet. Just as a reminder, this is a point-in-time report. So these are assets that you have right as of December 31st. So point in time, right at the end of the year. So you can see from a total current assets, there's a little bit of growth there. Most of that's up here in your cash and investments, so that's some cash from operations that has come in. Capital asset-wise, growth, most of that growth we're sitting in right here, this building being built and being grown. These restricted investments, most of that decrease is also because of where we're at right here, spending the money to build this. So in total, your total assets have grown just about $6 million as a district here. And you've got your deferred outflows. Nothing significant changes there. Really no huge significant changes in your liabilities other than just paying down your bonds and your notes payable. Really is the big biggest kind of change there. As you can see, from 44 down to the 41 million. So just a little bit of a decrease in there from your just making your current payments. And then deferred outflow. So then what that leaves you with, ultimately assets over your liabilities, is about $111 million net position. So you can see there's about a $9 million growth. We'll go into what made that $9 million growth really quick. Any question on the balance sheet? Okay, we'll keep going. So now this report, again, multi-year, this now is 12 months of activity. What's all the, you know, the inflows, the revenues that came in, and how did we spend our money? So again, in general, operating revenues went up a little bit. If I remember right, there was a 5% fee increase, and then just increased usage as the area continues to grow and you have more customers. And so we saw some increase in revenues. Most of the expenses, or the biggest shift in expenses, was this water production. So just overall cost to produce what you guys do here. Operating expenses grew a little bit, not as much as your operating revenues, which is a good thing here. So your operating income, 4.6, before we get to some of these, what we call non-operating revenues and expenses. As a whole here, again, there's some ups and downs that usually happens with some of these non-operating things. One year can get higher than the other. For instance, gain on sale of capital assets. So we sold our old building, and that makes up most of that gain for the year. That wouldn't be an expected future every year to get $1 million like that, right? So just some of that. Your interest expense, again, as you pay down your bonds, will go down. Obviously, sometimes as you get new loans, which I know you've done, that will impact that. But that's the amount of interest that was kind of expense this year. Okay, so all of that come in, then you get your capital contribution. So that's your change in that net position, like we said, of about $9.2 million to end at that $111 million. Okay. Awesome. The next page, I probably won't go into the cash flows too much. That's just the ins and outs, up and downs of cash and how cash went up and down, but I don't think I'll spend too much time there. Unless there's other questions, we're happy to dive into any of the notes, but I'm actually going to just blow right by all of them and just go back down to our last couple of audit reports. So this is the audit report about internal controls. So government auditing standards require us to communicate to the board if there are any internal control matters. Any significant deficiencies, material weaknesses are the terms that we would use. But if we saw anything that wasn't working, approvals weren't being done, there was a lot of adjustments that had to be made, just evidence of things not being done correctly. That's where this would reside. This report for this year is a clean report. I mean, we didn't identify any. Trying to see where it says. So material may exist, but they weren't identified, right? So we're just, it's a little disclaimer. They could have been there, but we didn't see anything. Everything that we looked at looks good. No issues to report there from a control perspective. And then our last report is our state compliance report. So every year you guys have to go through a state audit, state compliance audit. Those guidelines are just issued to us by the state auditor, and we just have to kind of follow them as well as you. As new rules get created, new laws get created, you guys have to come up with how you're also going to implement those and follow them. So these items were the ones that we tested this year, starting at that budgetary compliance down to Utah retirement systems. And there's a variety of tests and things that we look at just to ensure that, again, you're complying. And on this one, our opinion there is that you've complied in all material respects with these requirements. And no items to note to you as a board of things that we saw that were contrary to that. So pretty clean report, which is awesome. We like boring sometimes, right? Boring is good, where it's happen there. So everything all in all looked really great. We appreciate the staff that you have here, how accommodating they are to us. Just know when we come in and we ask for something, we're provided with that access. It's not a, oh, are you sure you need that? Or let me actually get you this instead type of a thing. Given what we're asked for.
We even got to play our own cubicles. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And I think that the saying with Trey and I became, I've got a spreadsheet for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stop asking questions. It seems like I already have the answer.
But we do appreciate it. It really does help the audit go really smooth. So we appreciate the staff and what they did here for us to help get to this point and have the clean report.
So nothing found out of compliance. Do you guys generally come up with a list of like recommendations or somewhere we can improve or anything like that? Is
that's
part of the scope of the audit? Or
it can be if we identify that.
We just curious.
Yeah, we were. Last year they found a change that the way Steve did something.
Okay.
And it was noted and we fixed it.
A lot of those things are just kind of more as we're here working with them and just saying, hey, here's a potential way that you could improve. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a good
list kind of
per se, but yeah.
What typically could happen.
Yeah.
And the only other comment, the signature, I've never seen a non-person signature like on some of these pages.
Oh,
I just wondered if that's like, I think even at the bottom of,
yeah,
like where it's Squire and Company.
You're right.
But those
I stole your cursor.
Okay, you're good. You're
that. Right, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's my ugly handwriting.
So. Okay.
So yeah, we do each, we sign our.
With a company.
With the
company. Okay. Company. I've just never seen that before. It's always like a person or people.
Yeah.
Companies or people, not right? Corporations.
Whatever that's AI what tells us.
I'm just kidding. You can tell it's not AI driven. I think AI's got better handwriting than that. Right. There's any other questions?
Yeah, Phil. Generally, I will go through the entire audit, and you know, I have a giant pile of questions for Steve, and Steve always answers all of them. You know, there's always something that, like a new FASB that changed. You know, where I'll see something that I haven't seen before.
And I have enough experience to understand changes. So.
Yeah. So.
So
yeah.
Thank you, guys.
I'll just, as you talk about new GASB, there is two new GASBs that you'll have to implement next year. It'll make your MD&A, your management's discussion analysis, look a little different. Not drastically, but it will change it a little bit in some of the schedules that you have there. And then the other ones related to capital assets probably won't have a significant impact. Just presentation, but not a significant impact. But just so you know, there will be a little bit of change when you look at it next year. You probably are going to say, hey, this looks different. And where is this section? Because it might be in some different order. Sorry to take
that. No, that's perfect. No, that's good to know. It's always good to know a little ahead of time.
Hey, Steve.
Yes.
I had a question on, there was a section that identified 4 significant risks. And I didn't understand going on then.
I think that's in our, what's called our letter to those charged with governance, so you as a board. What those significant risks are is our significant risk as an audit team. So our risk is that revenue recognition is not followed properly. And so that you overstate your revenues. Generally, that's just a general rule of thumb is you want more revenues than less, right? And so our risk is that you guys might be trying to show more revenues. So for us, our audit, yep, right there, improper revenue recognition. So that's just a risk that we have. And so as we go about our audit procedures, we have to test to make sure that risk is covered. It's not a risk that you as the entity has, nor is it a finding that says you guys recognized your revenue wrong. It's simply our audit risk that we have to, auditing standards require that we communicate that to you as a board just so that you're aware of what we're identifying as a risk.
Gotcha.
And that much, but it's purely an audit risk, and for us to drive some of our audit testing and make sure that we cover these risks. So not a finding or any issue for you guys to be concerned about. Does that address your question?
Yes. What about the one on override of controls? Was it that was one of those four, wasn't it?
Yep, that is one of those four. So that one also is just a risk that audit standards say is in every entity. And so the risk is that management would override their controls. So their control says I have to have approvals for this, or I have to have an invoice, or to make a journal entry, I have to have these approvals. And perhaps management would go in and override that because they have the power to do so. And so they would make an entry that's not appropriate. They would do something that doesn't follow policy. And so again, as we're doing our testing, we're trying to make sure that we don't see any evidence of that, and that there's nothing that's not supported or not following policy. And so that's just a generic one. That one is in every entity. Auditing standards just say that is a presumed fraud risk that you have to address as auditors.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions? Well, thanks for coming in tonight,
awesome.
Guys.
Thank you. Thanks for the
tools. Hopefully this is your favorite audit plan.
Yeah. None feed us dinner.
Oh, come on. Steve's great to work with. Loving you soft one, Kyle. Come on.
I read between the lines.
My apologies. I said the accounting staff is awesome. I'll stand by that. Management is awesome. All right.
Thank you.
Well,
you're good. Thank you. We'll take care of it. Don't worry.
There's that trash right there.
Yep. All right.
We'll let you do the table because I don't think I can put that
back. You're good. Thank you.
You want me to go this way?
Yeah, you're good. Thank you.
Okay. So, do we need to go into executive session?
We do.
Okay. So, do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Motion to go into executive session.
For potential litigation.
For potential litigation.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the next item is the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the May 21st, 2026 meeting minutes? Okay, and then does anyone have any questions on the check register?
Oh, I think. So, with the expenses, like they were on there twice, it's like looked like a charge, a refund, and then another charge.
What it was is I'd wired the money, but then they hadn't been paid by the wire in the system, so it generated a check, so we just voided the check.
Okay, because that was a check. I was like, it's like a scratch.
And we're required to make that electronically, that payment electronically.
Okay. And the service fee, the big one, is the payment, right?
And then there's kind of two. There was the original one that was bigger that was, like, to cover their legal fees and service fees, and there was a smaller one, which is kind of their first year managing it.
Is that servicing that loan, or is that...
There'll be a charge of about $13,000 a year for them to just, do the reimbursements, the dispersals, and manage it, that we're doing everything right.
In addition to a fee from Zions.
Cost money.
Yeah. Unfortunately. So, I guess. Just a random question. Like, what do you use nitrogen for?
Yes, we have nitrogen at our Ross Canyon facility. Old ranch and pipe time booster station. So instead of having air in a surge tank, we use nitrogen.
Okay.
So inert. It's inert. It doesn't dissolve as fast into the water. It gets absorbed.
So I was just curious.
We also don't have to have big fat compressors because if we get it in liquid form.
Was a headache.
Yeah. So we get the nitrogen in liquid form and use an expansion chamber to fill it. So.
Anyone else have questions? I just had a couple. It looks like Carson McKnight is getting tuition reimbursement. What is he studying?
Accounting. So he's been working with Steve and the finance team just on the basics of the system, of the district's finances.
Okay. And then there was a thing for Geologic Associates about iron bacteria and the Old Ranch Road well. Is everything okay?
So that's Bill Laughlin's new firm, the firm he now works for.
Yeah, it's two separate projects. One of them's iron bacteria. We're looking into a different well. And then the Old Ranch well is the proposed well we're currently drilling. So that's an ongoing invoice for oversight on the well drilling.
Okay. So we don't have a problem.
Not at Old Ranch well.
Okay.
That's all been good news, generally.
Okay, great. Mike, you don't have any questions on the check register?
Nope.
Okay.
What are the Home Depot? I saw another note. The comment said jail.
Jail well.
Oh, okay. He's a different jail.
Family file.
Yeah. It's funny when I see adult think of sluts, others might think about it.
It looks like we also have an approval of surplus Connex containers, sheds, and an old transformer.
Yeah, so Chris pulled up a picture. So as they're going to be doing the treatment plant expansion, we have these old sheds that are behind the treatment plant right now and some old Connex containers. They will all need to be moved, disposed of during the expansion and the construction. We're asking for approval for all three sheds and the three Connexes. We may keep one or two of those Connexes actually to make sure we have storage during construction and just move them to the side, but we feared we get approval. And in the memo, I mentioned that the sheds, it seems like a low price, kind of the $500, but it's going to require them to also come disassemble them, haul them away. And they're all under, my understanding is they're very hard to reassemble because not all the holes fit back in or whatever. So it's almost like instead of us taking it for scrap, if somebody's willing to come just do the labor and take it, we'll let them do it.
And if we have no internal interest, then we'll just knock them over.
Scrap them. Yeah. But yeah, the Connexes are a little more money, and that's kind of going right for that size for a used Connex.
Are you talking like crane, like mini crane to put them together?
Got to be off by September.
The window and a door and a nice.
Well, yeah, you can see
we live in it.
This one has a, we kind of had a door and then added the roller door to it.
Okay.
In my understanding, some of these are attached to the Connexes to give them some
support.
Support.
It's a shear wall.
Yeah, one of them might be, but.
All I know is it's really cold on like January 1st or 2nd trying to do inventory.
Yeah, you're walking around in those.
So I'm really glad we're not going to have many. And that inventory is just back there.
All right. Does anyone want to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Mike?
Aye.
We didn't hear that, Mike, if you said anything.
Aye.
That they stopped me, but I can't hear.
Can you hear me?
Text or chat?
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
It's on his phone, so I don't know if they can chat with the
you guys
app. There's no video.
You guys?
He's just on his phone. So.
Okay. What do we do, Mike?
Do we need all three?
Yeah. I mean,
three's enough.
Yeah, you've got okay. Three, so.
Okay. It passes with three votes. All right, Steve, tell us about May.
Well, May was good for revenue, bad for conservation, is kind of, let's say, the summary of it.
Net position continued to be better than budget. We're up to about $780,000 better than budget. As you can see, most of that is from revenue. We're about 9.3% above on revenue, and we're 4.7% below on expenses. The big change in revenue was water sales. If you recall from the previous months, we were running below budget, about $100,000. And May made us pop to almost $100,000 over budget because there was so much usage. So big usage in May. Development-related collections kind of maintained their position. Not a lot of impact fees in May, but the big ones in April keep us well above budget for the year so far. Let's see, other revenue is doing well because of interest. We sold several trucks and had that money come in. As far as expenses, they kind of keep moving quickly. Depreciation, we will be over budget on depreciation for the whole year because we set the budget, but now we've got more assets, so the depreciation expense on those is going to continue throughout the year. So just kind of expect that. The interesting thing is, if you can look at just kind of those top two lines, operations and maintenance, look at 2027, 2026 actual, and across to 2025 actual, on those first, on those first two lines, and you can see they're almost flat. We're almost at the same expenses this year as we were last year, which is in a way a good sign. Say we're really controlling our expenses well. So let's go ahead and move down. So no concern about expenses. We'll see how much we can continue to save. Some will probably spike if usage stays high. Our operating cash is at $8.4 million. Last year was $6.87 million. Kind of what Kyle alluded to, the extra cash we generated last year. We're starting to spend it on capital projects, but we're still sitting on more cash than we normally would. Overall, the cash position has dropped, but that's because of we used all that restricted cash to finish building this building in 2025. All right, customer growth. Interesting, we did have 6 new connection requests in May, so we're up to 34. As you can see, that's below historical for the last 4 years, but impact fee revenue is actually higher than a couple of those years. Again, that was spiked by the large impact fee that came out of Old Branch Road. Promontory is at 12 lots sold compared to kind of their last 3 years, kind of about where they normally are. So, kind of a mixed bag on growth. I would have thought more connection requests, but we're okay on impact fees, so we'll see how the summer goes. Water usage, this was the big change. We went from last year, 159 acre feet used by our customers to 183 acre feet this May, which was surprising. I mean, not surprising in that it was so dry, everybody really turned on their systems early. But we're continuing to see the irrigation season kind of start sooner if you look at these numbers over the last 4 years. So, again, we went from where usage for the year was below historical averages to now we're 18% above historical averages by our own customers. The golf course took 35 – golf courses took over 35 million gallons compared to 30 million gallons last year. Park City – again, they're more this year, and they apparently are really pushing again right now because they're down a couple of wells. So likelihood is we will wield quite a bit more water to Park City this year than we did last year. And, of course, Summit Water, we're not doing anything this year, but I'm leaving on the historical information. So, May, as we get into the bigger bills, we'll see if people reaction. We'll talk about the top 20 customers here in a minute. But we might get some movement, kind of like we did in the drought year, where like 1 year, 1 month, somebody gets a big bill, and the next month they get better, but somebody else uses a lot of water, and so you're always kind of juggling who's using a lot of water. All right, let's go down to our budget. So the blue is where we are actually. If you recall, Orin, the budget would have been just below purple, kind of like how it is for the rest of the year. So we'll have to see how June plays out usage-wise. It still is dry and hot, and conservation doesn't seem to be really – didn't take hold in May. So let's see what happens with June and the increased rates we put in place last year for those high usage tiers. Let's go down to the next one.
And you'll see that big change. So we had been under budget every month, and all of a sudden residential popped over $100,000 above budget. Golf course popped above irrigation. So the ones that are more indoor or predictable stayed pretty close to budget, but the ones that really focus on outdoor watering really saw a spike in May. All right, so let's move. Oh, capital budget. Want to give you a quick summary of the capital budget. As you recall, we do have a couple of big projects this year, the Canyons tank and the Old Ranch well that we're doing internally. Maybe Sam will speak to those, but Old Ranch well is going well. We spent $633,000, still have budget for $650,000. The tank, we've just started into things, but then we'll have to see if we can actually do that this year or not. There may have been some delays with the county. This 2.3, that's the money we're going to have to pay once Weaver Basin finishes the 224 interconnect. And then the treatment plant, we spent $3.5 million, still plan to spend $39 million before it's all said and done. So, but tackling two big projects like this in a year is a little out of the normal. We usually only do one big project like that a year. But just kind of gives you an idea. I know there have been questions of, well, was that in the budget or not? But, like the garages down at Lost Canyon, they were in the budget, and the transformer pads and things like that. So
the new office is 100% done. So
yeah. If we had a small invoice for inspections come in for like $200, I just expensed it because I already capitalized everything for the building. So kind of just a quick snapshot of the capital budget financial picture for the year so far. All right. Now we'll get into some other stuff. I think next is usage by tiers. I'll try to go quickly. So I've highlighted these sections because I just kind of want to focus there. So May last year, this was the usage by our residential customers. This is this May. You can see there was more in all the tiers, except this one right here. Maybe those two right there, but quite a bit more usage. We went from 38.2 million to 44.7. Again, the commentary on how much usage, how high usage was in May. This is kind of the more interesting one that we'll continue to watch through the summer. So we added, I did the math earlier, like 139 customers, but the spread, you can see each. So this is the customers who use less than 5,000 customer gallons. That went down. But all these other tiers went up. So we've got a lot more people who went into the 5 to 20 and 20 to 30 and 30 to 40 than we did last year. So you can see a lot more. It wasn't just a handful of people. We had saw a kind of a lot of people move into higher usage tiers during this May. Let's go to the other one. We have identified who, you know, these high users are. And that's kind of that next sheet. Well, let's jump to the top 20, if you don't mind first, Chris, that one. So we've identified these, obviously, for privacy reasons. We didn't share customer number or customer name, but we did want to look at where our high users were during May.
And are these all residential?
These are just residential, not commercial. So these are all residential customers. They're all large residential. You can see a lot of promontories pop up. A lot along the North Ridge, like Glenwild, Red Hawk, where there's several colony. Andy actually has taken it upon himself and contacted several of these people to see if we could help encourage them to use less water. I think with some mixed results at times, but we're trying to.
And the top, the really high.
I mean,
one
the
was
338,000.
Can't get my head around that.
That was a leak.
Partial leak, and then And kind of, he's one that's new who maybe didn't realize how much water would be. So he is also one, a few of these might be kind of new customers who once they get their first big bill, they go, holy crap. And then they kind of change their behavior. But we are identifying those because you can make a lot of, you can save a lot more water by focusing on these super high users, let's say. Okay, let's go back to this one, Chris, for just a minute.
And then we can continue to monitor this to see who falls off of these top 20 and maybe have some new ones.
See who are repeat offenders.
How many we could actually be impacting with high.
4% of our usage, just on the sheet.
Yeah.
I do our math right.
Yeah, it's definitely, I always refer to the 80-20 rule, but it's not even that. It's like the top 20% use a lot of water.
So if some of you will recall this, where we compare by type of customer, their May usage to this year. So, for example, the golf course went from 30 million to 35. Large residential went from 22 to 27. Residential actually went down a little bit. So this is kind of the change. What I've compared it to or added to this report from previous years is this is the estimated indoor usage. This is based off of months when we know there's not outdoor irrigation. So I averaged, basically there's 5 months a year now is what it's down to, where we don't have any outdoor irrigation. So this is the estimated outdoor. And if we were going to reach a 20% reduction, this would have been the number. So for example, let's use golf course because it's easy. So they were at 30, they went to 35. Since they were at 30, if they would have had a 20% reduction, they would have been at 24. So they're 11 million gallons over the 20% reduction, for example. The other one is large residential. They were at 22, they went to 27. Some of that was indoor, some of that's outdoor. So a reduction of outdoor, this should have been their number. So they were about 8 million gallons over. So again, large residential customers really drive usage in the summer because of large lots, lots of landscaping, lots of irrigation. So we're going to, again, it just helps. We're trying to identify like the people we have to talk to. And it's becoming clear it's large residential. We're identifying the customers in the areas. We just try to do the best we can to help people meet conservation goals. So
what are you going to do about the golf usage? I mean, that's almost half, right?
I'll speak to what I know, but anybody feel like they can chime in. The golf course owns their own water lease fees. So, and they don't use all of them. So they're like, well, we're not even using everything. So why do we have to reduce 20%?
They're basing their reduction on their total lease rights, not on consumption.
Not on their previous year consumption. So it's a little, they're not a district customer where we can say, well, we control you. Everything, your water lease fees, there's a little any ideas on irrigation and what we might be able to, who we would talk
well,
to?
Well, I mean, you know, some of the leverage, I don't know, the leverage might be, I mean, I thought Sam had mentioned something in his summary about, like, there's a contractual, at least a peak day demand or something that... It just seems like last year was unsustainable, and in May, when we told nobody to turn on their irrigation until June 1st, we're already ahead of last year. So I feel like we should be concerned.
Yeah. There's like, in my mind, there's two things. The first thing is the drinking water system is stressed much, much harder than the water system. In that sense, being able to deliver the water, it's much easier to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the second part is there's only two contractual limits I'm aware of. Partnership promontory, and one is the annual allocation that was Chris was talking about. And if I was them, I'd make the same argument. We'll take a reduction. Annual. And it's business as usual. The second limit is just in regards to the physical capacity of the importation project. And that is a hard limit on how much water we can deliver over the course of the day. So they have a big volume they can use over the year, and then there's a restriction on how quickly we can deliver that water in any given day.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot. And those are the only two limits. We've actually just today kind of put in a framework to have guardrails to control that peak limit, because it's never been an issue until last year was the first time. That's what we're trying to do through.
That may slow some of their usage. If they are hitting above peak,
then what Sam's working on maybe helps slow some of that usage down, because even though they have the writes or that many over a year, they're using them to condense too quickly in a day. And if they hit that, that might help control their usage. But to
Karen's point, their peak limit is a larger.
So their peak limit, I mean, because the golf course is probably going to use like 3 million gallons a day during the summer, right? During July and August.
Their peak limit is something like 4 million gallons a day.
So they basically the entire.
Last year, just broad numbers, a third of that allocation they used to drinking water, two thirds they used for water.
You know, the way I look at it often is this 35 million gallons is more than all the large homes in the whole district use.
Right. It's kind of, you know, yeah. It just seems like that is the obvious pinch point, and I don't know. Yeah, it just seems like one more crisis situation.
I think you're not seeing signs of it yet.
I don't have any great answers, so anybody else wants to chime in or say anything? Brian, Andy, Lisa.
You know, it's the balance of, you know, revenue on one hand, that does help defer some of the costs. Conservation on the other hand, and part of the conversation we did have with Promontory today is we let them know out of our top 20 customers in May, 14 of those from Promontory. We have a privacy issue where we just can't tell people who or where. But we're trying to figure out if there's a way that they can help us with a conservation message. And unfortunately, people drive around and see their neighbor doing it. So if they can do it, why can't I do it? Ian and her team, I mean, we're watching this every day and trying to call people and, you know, emphasize. We've sent letters, emails. We're finding people. If they're watering every day, $500. And it unfortunately, people's wallets, $500 doesn't mean anything. They want a green lawn. But we're still activating leases on conservation constantly, and I don't know, like Steve says, I don't know what the simple solution is to get people to stop.
Yeah, because I asked the HOA to include messaging, you know, about the June 1st, you know, not starting, and largely ignored, which, you know, which is disappointing, right?
I think Kelly heard it today, though, and she'll help us message it.
Okay.
So that's any questions. Those are my reports for the month. If you have any other questions, I'll continue. Or if you'd like to see any tweak to these, you know, let me know. But I'll continue to produce these every month so we can review if we do any better on not having so many customers move down into tiers, and if we can see any drops in usage in any of these categories. So. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Vasta.
It's good to know this now, you know, before we head into June and July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If people may get the shock with this thing. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they declared the governor did the declaration of the emergency on May 21st. But it's been very dry. I mean, we had a very dry winter. It's been very dry June. We haven't had any precipitation. Yeah. They were hoping that the El Nino was set up early and bring the early monsoons, but that didn't happen. We've been pretty much dry all June. So this could be the pattern into July and August if the monsoons don't come. So, yeah. And I don't know what to say. Andy did a PSA I went on and talked about the landscape lawn exchange. We have had quite a few people inquire about the landscape lawn exchange program. So that's, you know, people are interested. There are those people out there that are conscientious. And I would say the majority of our customers are. We just have a handful that.
If you look at the residential category, so the homes under 3,000 square feet, they actually did go down this May versus last May.
Yeah, so I think
they're trying.
Some of that, it's working. It's just some of those larger ones really outweigh the small benefit that we're getting from the other side.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Anna, tell us a little bit about the certified tax liens. Looks like a lot of them this year.
Actually, less.
Is it?
Okay. But, and it's actually gone down again. I'm down to 56 people, I think, this time. They had till the 15th. They'll really have a grace period until we have to submit it to the county, which I think is like July 1st or 2nd.
July 8th. Is when we'll go to the council.
Well, we have to get it in the packet.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll have to the end of the month. So we're down to 56.
Okay, and this is delinquent accounts that we would be imposing liens on the property. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of these are vacant lots, correct?
There are a lot that are vacant lots. There's a couple that are actual homes that just can't seem to catch up, and they prefer us to just lien them outright and pass a couple. We had a couple really large ones on here, and they've made some payment plan arrangements with us. And yeah, there's developer lots in there, like 26 of them.
Yeah, I think mostly because Summit Park is at the top of the list. I know that address. I know that guy.
There's a couple on there.
And I started just kind of looking through the parts of the map. And it seemed like 8 to 10 of them in Summit Park were vacant lots that people are probably just hanging on to, and they just prefer it hit their tax bill because
then they
don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
So is that, and that was my other question, how it works. So they basically get leaned from the tax bill, it adds to the tax bill.
Okay. And the county makes us whole. We don't have to wait for them to pay it.
Yeah. We get paid right away.
And it's kind of a yearly process, then, right?
Yeah. Raises it. Okay. Instead of getting a bill once a month, you get a bill once a year.
Yeah. Okay. And the big one was looked like a commercial development by Canyons.
Yeah, that's
36 or something. Is that those like connection fee? Yeah.
That's the Ascent.
That's the Ascent Hotel.
The water
is not finished.
Okay.
And then the others.
And there were a bunch down at the end that I assume are all developer lots, that they were all the same amount.
Yeah, but they're all by the same. Yeah.
Do we need to make a motion?
Yes.
Yeah. To recommend to the county council. Would anyone like to make a motion to recommend to the county council that we send these in?
I move recommend the approval of the 2026 certified tax lien for delinquent fees and charges for the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District to the Summit County Council.
And I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Mike, are you still on?
Aye.
I texted him and he didn't respond.
I texted him and he didn't.
Said that at 7, right?
Yeah, he's still
aye.
Now I'm not allowed to text him during the meeting.
I know, I was like,
we're checking on it. That's all I did.
Don't admit to that.
All right, motion carries.
Hear us.
Lisa?
Yeah,
would you like to give us the drought
update? Quick drought update. Kind of mentioned it. Been hot and dry. This was the drought monitor from last week. It was updated today again. We do have a small portion in the upper northwest corner that's gone into the D4. So we do have some D4 on the drought map now. And for some reason, I'm not sure why the red on the right-hand side is now been taken to more orange. So that's come out. Maybe that's some of that rain that we had, maybe that early, like late May. But we are getting into
a D4 stage in some of Utah. So I'm interested to see how this continues to go, like we said, with hot temperatures in the future for the next, looks like, 10 days to me. When we had our last meeting, Governor Cox had just issued the state of emergency on May 21st. That will expire because it's only good for 30 days. The legislature is in session right now. I kind of thought they would extend that, but I haven't heard anything yet. But that may be announced soon. Weber Basin has not changed anything. We haven't been made aware of any additional cuts that they're thinking of. It's still just the 20%. Reservoir levels right now, statewide, we're at 68% full, which is 7% lower than normal and 18% lower than last year at this time. We talked about the El Nino a little bit. We'll have to see if that monsoons pop up in July and August. We do have increased fire behavior. It's starting sooner than it normally does. Summit County on June 12th did increase the fire danger to moderate, and we are in stage one fire restrictions. So no open fires and no fireworks currently. So we will continue to monitor. I normally have a drought update call. I would have had one on Tuesday. They've moved it to next Tuesday, so I'll get a good update on where the state is at with initiatives and what they're looking at for forecasting. And I'll have that next time. That's it. Any questions?
No, they just updated it today. It looks like a difference.
So the little brown at the top now, and then that yellow, or it's the red is gone from that side of the orange. And I, like I said, I didn't have, they have the state drought call normally happens on Tuesday. We would have gotten a little more information on why those changes happened, but they moved it to next week.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago, I sent you out the concurrency report. We received another favorable report from the Board of Health. One of the things that we noticed that we had been carrying on our concurrency spreadsheet, a higher number, so we were able to lower that, which means technically we have more available ERCs to issue. We're not even close to, you know, running out, so you should have all received that. If not, I can send it out again. Since our last meeting, the day after our last board meeting, Administrator Lee Zeldin from the EPA came and spent an hour and a half with us or so. The EPA put out a press release. This is just the blurb specifically about Mountain Regional. And then there were just a couple pictures at the bottom of that that to show you. Overall, it was, you know, a positive meeting, nothing really earth-shattering, cordial. So anyway, we thanked him for the WIFIA money. But anyways, it was a good opportunity for the district to be able to spend some time with him. The last thing in the packet, so the URS is changing the contribution rates effective July 1st, the employer portion, the employee person, both the employer contribution to the tier one and tier two are going down. The employee portion for tier two is going up. The ask tonight is we are still, with these changes, the district will be able to save money if we do nothing. The employees and the tier two would then have to make up the difference. With the difference in savings between the employer contribution in both tier one and tier two, we're asking if the board would approve the increase that the employee would have to make, which would still mean the district would save a net savings of $883.31 a month. If we don't do anything, then the savings is $1,312.97 a month. So I know we've asked for this before and the board's granted it. There's still a savings for the district. Maybe the question is, you know, if they keep making changes, should we feel obligated to keep doing this or not. My opinion is, since the district is still saving money and not costing the district more money than we've already budgeted, I'm asking for approval to make this increase, which means in order for the employee to make the contribution, wages would have to be increased by the corresponding amount. So the net difference to the tier two employee is not changed.
So that's why there's a difference between the 551 and the 515 and the 207 and the 193. Is it's just an increase in the wages and then that goes through into savings.
Would it make sense to propose just automatically doing this? This is kind of a recurring pattern.
My only hesitation with doing that is if it comes to a point where there is no longer a district savings.
That's what I'm thinking. Is it every year?
It's been every year for the last.
Too bad, I guess. It's like if it's every couple months.
It's an annual based on the state's fiscal year of July 1st.
I have opinions.
Well, I will just to also throw it out there, Summit County is not increasing wages for their employees. So they've decided to not do that because of what Andy said. They're afraid of it continuing 0.5 point, just it sets a precedent. That's also compounding, right, for the district cost. So that's so the side the county is taking.
As a tier two employee myself, the trust makes it very, very clear when you sign on, whatever, get onboarded onto the system, that there is a risk that the formula gets inverted and the employee will be on the hook for more than the 10% threshold. This is strictly a concern for the tier two pension employees and the tier two employees who opt for the 401k alternative are unaffected because the 10% threshold doesn't really exist there. And
we would, if approved, we would do it for all tier two employees.
And I think I insisted on that last year when we did this, and I appreciate that. No, I don't work here. So I don't have a problem with it from that perspective. I do worry that kind of the crossing of the equation here is going to continue to potentially spiral because I don't trust that the trust itself is doing a decent job of balancing their budgets. That's my primary concern. I would want to make sure that if it goes into effect for the tier two employees, it is all tier two employees, right, regardless of whether they're on the pension plan or the 401k.
Yeah, and these numbers.
Right. That might be the end of my story.
That's the end of my story. Say the end.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly appreciate the fact that we will still have a net savings and, that we value the employees in the district. So I would be in favor.
Okay. I don't know. No opinion, really.
I assume we would have to have somebody make a motion.
Yes. Though you don't have this notice for action tonight, yeah.
Okay.
Does this have to be noticed? Could it just be a general manager decision?
It's not affecting the budget. So I don't know if that's actually still, it's actually going down because our employer savings cover any increase that would be on the employee side.
I guess what's the action? What's the action item in order to implement this?
It would be to increase tier two employee wages by 0.49% to cover the employee portion of the tier two.
Okay. you would need board action.
You would.
And that, I mean, you can just bring it back so it's noticed on the agenda for consideration.
For next meeting thing, or is it email?
You could do a special meeting if you wanted to, and everybody can show up over Zoom.
Do we have some sort of a time crunch?
It's starting July, the payroll that includes July 1st. So that actually doesn't get paid until the first couple weeks of July. So
and honestly,
we could go to July and we could do a retro.
You could approve a retro.
Yeah, we can put it on the agenda for July.
Put it on July and retro.
Okay. We can do that.
That would probably be the safest bet. Again, only because here it's just a line item under the manager's comments.
16th would be the next pay period in July.
So it's
8A.
And when's the board meeting?
The
16th.
Speaking of that, bring up what Lisa puts in for the timeline for the rest of the year. I just want to make sure, as we look at board meeting dates for the rest of the year, that we're all in agreement that those are still the days that we want to meet on. I know Ian's been out, and then Mike's out tonight.
I get on a plane at 5:40 on our next meeting, so it's a smooth takeoff. I can get on Wi-Fi the plane, but there's a good chance I wouldn't make that one.
I'm here until October.
So in August, we're going to have Carollo come in and do the 90%. We'll start budgeting October. That's an important one.
I don't have any obvious conflicts.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay. And Mike had texted saying that he's stuck on mute.
Can you guys hear me?
Oh, we will go ahead and put that on the July.
Can you guys hear me?
Is all well. The other thing is, yesterday Lisa coordinated a wellness event for the district. It was well attended. We had a DEXA scan. We had different vendors come in and talk to the employees. So we're really trying to emphasize good wellness behaviors. So it was a good event.
I just had a DEXA scan last week. We were like sharing some numbers, maybe not all numbers, but not amongst.
I don't know, my report was long. I was like, I don't know.
We're going to put the pictures on the wall and figure out who's who. So anyways, that's all I have.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions on the department updates?
Oh, can you pull it up? Is there
which one do you want?
Or, question.
What was your question about?
It was about something about a leak. Leak count.
Is that yours? Or is that?
It was yours, yeah. There's a little graphic in the upper left. Yeah. The iron water thing, so
your sign up. And then there's the
leak count number.
Yep.
So are those suspected leaks based on iron water detection?
Yes. So more than 1 gallon per hour.
Okay.
For 24 hours consecutive.
And then without eye that someone's calling in, or we just know because of night, like overnight or something.
So with the iron water, that means that they are signed up. Mm-hmm. Like they can log in and look. And the 94 are people who...
I gotcha.
Like, they still get the notifications because we put their email in as contact.
So we've detected it through the badge or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It just, they don't have it. They're not linked to see it.
They don't care.
Okay, I get that.
To sign up.
I should know what that difference was. Okay.
Yeah, they don't want to sign up. They
yeah,
don't care.
I hear you. Okay.
That's it. Yeah, I had a question on that, too. If you go down just a little bit more. So you've got... somebody who had 4 notices and, you know,
yes,
about to get, do we know what neighborhood that's in?
It was Glenwood.
And they've just ignored the notices? And
Andy called. He was nice.
Yeah.
And were they and not done?
I think she just didn't
Well,
know.
Part of the problem is when you have people with second homes and property managers, there's a disconnect between who's getting in the information, who's paying the bill, and oftentimes those don't match. And so I tracked down the homeowner, and she said, well, you got to call Kevin. So I found Kevin, and I said, Kevin, this property's got 138 gallons an hour leak, and you're watering every day. And he goes, oh, do you think it's the water feature? Well, if you're not living there, why is your water feature on? So he went and shut the water feature off, and that cut it down to 25.
Don't water features recycle?
Well, and if they...
But they leak. You know, they're notorious.
The autofill.
And
the autofill stuck open. Yeah. So anyways, Kevin took care of the problem. Now, the homeowner is going to get a bill, not because of what we did, but because of the amount of water that they used.
Yeah. But she's not going to get shut off.
They figured it out.
Yeah. Right.
138 gallons an hour.
You know, we're not trying to be, you know, really difficult with people. We're trying to just have a conversation with them, remind them what the condition is. When you find out they don't live there, you find out they're watering every day, and it's like, why? Why? Why do you need your water feature on if no one's there to see it?
Yeah. A lot of times someone's left a hose on. We have a couple of those in Silver Springs. Like, they don't live here. They finally found it. The neighbor walked outside.
Yeah. The neighbors pumping out of the water feature to monitor.
We're trying to be educational, not punitive.
Sure.
Maybe my brain bucket is below half.
I know. Mine's empty. I used all mine.
Mike is good with the schedule.
Okay. If there is nothing else, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye. We are adjourned at 7:25.